Hi there. You're listening to the Newing Podcast, where we dive into the fashion world, take its seams apart, and look at the truths behind it.
I moved here to study fashion.
Join us every month to explore ethical fashion, from the workers who made your clothes to new materials, fashion's environmental impact, sustainable style, and much, much more.
Hi, guys. On this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking to Emily Stockel. She helps lead ambassador engagement and community management at Remake, a global advocacy organization fighting for fair play and climate justice within the clothing industry. I started reading on Remake and I stumbled upon this quote from Aisha Barnblatt, founder and CEO of Remake, that I feel kind of sums up Remake quite well. She said, too often, many conversations around sustainability are business-led with limited or no input from fashion's frontline workers. And she added that Remake is a play on remaking connections between garment workers and all of us. And this is so cool, this idea of connection. And it's so important, right? Because, and especially connecting for us as when we are in the position of consumers as connecting the dots from what we're doing. Because the fact is, when we buy a garment, most of us don't think of the material it's made of, where was it made of, and much less the people making it or the conditions where they were in. Could you maybe add to this introduction of Remake and explain to people hearing us what Remake is and does, and what moved Aisha to create Remake?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're so right. It is about bringing like the human back into these stories. We think of like ourselves as consumers, but it really is like a human story and a relationship between people. But just to take us back a little bit to Remake's founding story. So our founder, Aisha, had worked in the intersection of worker rights and the garment industry for many years and was beginning to realize that systemic change centered around workers was not happening quickly enough. And she felt that the space needed a grassroots change-making movement in order to address these issues. And together we could link arms. We are stronger together when we take collective action than we are on our own. And together by doing that, we could remake the fashion industry in a sense. And so Remake today is an education and advocacy organization. So we work in both education, but also in policy and brand accountability. And we work together with many partners across the Fashion Changemaking Coalition, from, you know, ethical and sustainable fashion brands, to unions, to press, to policymakers, to citizens and students and entrepreneurs, all linking arms, as they say, to reshape the industry by changing law, holding big fashion brands accountable on paying fair pay and addressing climate justice.
Yeah, you guys do a lot. It's a big task, but it's also a very important task that you're embracing. And Remake does focus on the fashion industry treatment of its workforce. And on your website, you guys write that when fashion brands commit to paying garment workers higher wages, this fuels a positive chain reaction of reduced output, higher quality products, and a greener footprint. Investing in workers is an investment in people and the planet. I love this. But I would also love for you to talk a bit about these connections, how by paying workers a higher wage, we ultimately have a higher quality product and also a smaller output.
Absolutely. Yeah, something very important about the way that Remake works is we believe that you can't separate people, humans, workers, from the story of sustainability and climate. So solutions to change the fashion industry should address both the intersectional issues of climate justice and human rights. And in order to do that, we acknowledge that that means rebuilding the very structure of the fashion industry from the ground up, with worker wages being at the center of the model. If we think of the way the fashion industry is shaped today, it's all about driving as much product as possible for as little price. And, you know, there's accounting backwards on that price that tends to squeeze down on the worker wages at the end. And so this would position worker wages at the center of the model and build the fashion industry around that. And our theory is that higher wages for workers would shift the industry's focus away from this idea of producing cheap and disposable product. And by producing less product, higher quality product meant to last longer, it would also reduce carbon emissions. So what this is also sort of getting at is the fact that today, fashion brands, when they talk about climate solutions for the fashion industry, a lot of that relies on the optics of climate solutions. It doesn't really push far enough to achieve the real systemic change in both worker rights and sustainability that is necessary, where we're proposing like an ideology being built around living wages. And we believe that's a way to completely transform the fashion industry going forward and get at the heart of both matters. And like you said, because these two issues are so interconnected, it would result not only in better quality jobs and better pay, but also better quality products, reduction of carbon emissions, a greener footprint for the fashion industry. All of these things are intertwined together.
We definitely need to take, like, as you said, a systemic approach to it, and not just solving. I feel like in the fashion industry, we as when we talk about brands, as we're a brand, brands a lot of the times focus on the materials that we use. So we're not, you know, we're going to stop using polyester, no to plastics and all of that. But we forget that in sustainability has these three pillars, and people are a big part of it, and the connection between people and even the materials used and how it works as a unit. And yeah, we cannot address one and not address the other points.
Right. And that's not to say that these other shifts are, you know, not impactful. But if you think about it in this way, we think that it's the way to change this fashion industry most significantly would be putting living wages at the core of it. And that would in turn affect all of these other elements that brands are considering, from materials to shipping to, you know, everything else. It would have these knock-on effects.
On your 2022 impact report, you guys write that fashion is made by 70 million garment workers, 80% of whom are women of color. Sadly, your data also says that today, 93% of the world's brands don't pay these essential workers enough to live. And even though this is like a $1 trillion industry, which is insane. And Remake does reach out to factory workers, gives them a platform for them to voice their concerns and their problems, which is so important. As we know, these women are hardly ever heard, ever given a voice. How did this work from Remake start, and can you speak on what are these workers' biggest concerns?
Yeah. So the way that Remake approaches policy and advocacy work is always by following the lead of garment worker and union partners in terms of the solutions we advocate for to reshape the fashion industry. So we put our muscle behind solutions that garment workers and union partners have endorsed, championed, developed from the very beginning. And I think a great example of this is the Garment Worker Protection Act, which is a worker-led policy change in the state of California here in the U.S., the aim being to eliminate the system of piece rate pay and hold brands liable for wage theft within garment factories. And this was a piece of policy that garment workers in the state of California identified the major issues of the industry and then spearheaded this campaign for reform, and were able to pass the Garment Worker Protection Act into law in California. Remake strength, I would say, has always been in coalition building. So bringing together all of the partners, the brands, the educators, the fashion activists, the press, to understand these issues and then to advocate for what are worker proposed solutions. And I think that's why the success of the Garment Worker Protection Act is a really great case study of what we do and how we work in coalition. And that bill has actually led to a proposed federal Fabric Act, so a federal version of this policy, which would affect the entire United States, which we're likewise championing to be passed along with garment worker partners. And you mentioned, you know, what are the major workplace issues? And of course, living wages are a major issue. Like I said, with the Garment Worker Protection Act, piece rate pay, liability for brands so that brands cannot say, oh, well, the garment workers that were sewing in that factory, they aren't actually workers of our brand. They're subcontractors. So tightening up that liability for brands. These are some of the issues that workers have identified. But also workplace safety continues to be a significant issue, which is why we have also championed the International Accord, which is a legally binding agreement between garment brands and global trade unions to ensure safe workplaces, safe factories. So those are some of the key issues that workers have identified and that we've been trying to champion solutions to solve.
And as you were saying, you guys develop work through education and advocacy efforts. And I believe one of your biggest campaigns that happened during COVID, right, the 2020. And of course, we all know that the pandemic was an extremely hard period for everyone mentally, economically, but of course, worse for some. And it really exposed the weaknesses and the injustices of the fashion industry. A lot of stories came out on how brands started canceling orders and kind of held back from paying the factories that were making the clothes, whom in turn then weren't able to pay the workers making the clothes. So how did Remake intervene? How did the pay up campaign, right, that you guys created come about?
Yeah, so as you described, pay up formed in March 2020 out of the fashion industry making the decision to refuse payment for completed clothing orders as the pandemic started. So retail stores were shuttering and fashion sales were falling in March 2020, as we all remember, and dozens of global fashion brands started to refuse to pay for finished goods that garment workers had already completed sewing. And it was calculated that there was an estimated $40 billion with a B worth of finished goods that had not Wow. been paid. And so our coalition utilized research by the Worker Rights Consortium, as well as the Penn State Center for Global Worker Rights, to determine, you know, that millions of garment workers were being laid off without pay as a result of these cancellations, that it was causing a grave economic crisis, that there were no safety nets or paychecks or savings. You know, here in the United States, I know we're speaking to a global audience, but I think folks can remember the fear of what was happening during the pandemic when people started to lose their jobs. And, you know, in some instances, people did receive some protections for that. This was not the case for the workers who were laid off during these cancellations. And so we spearheaded this demand that brands must pay up the billions of dollars that were owed to garment workers. And it was really strengthened by the power of social media, truly. 270,000 citizens signed the original pay up petition, and people were using the pay up hashtag around the world to call on brands to do right by their workers. And the result was that pay up was able to recover $22 billion in stolen wages and contracts from major fashion brands. And this includes brands like H&M, Gap, Target, Zara, Levi's, and many, many more. And it was hailed as the most successful women-led rights campaign in terms of financial impact on garment workers in modern fashion history, which is sort of astonishing to consider.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's such an impactful work that you guys did.
I think in many cases with pay up, the time was right. I think people around the world were having conversations about essential workers and worker safety. And we were starting to understand and see ourselves in these stories and in you know, see this happening and start to fear that this could happen to anyone we know. And I think that motivated a lot of people to feel like they needed to take action and get involved. And we hope that that message and that story kind of sticks with people and they continue to stay involved in this work as we go forward.
Yeah, and actually, I imagine a lot of people who hear all of this information for the first time might be, on one hand, shocked and wonder also how they can do more. And so if someone wishes to join the Remake movement, how can they do it?
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right. It can be so overwhelming to learn about these things for the first time. And the first thing I always tell folks to do is join a movement, because it takes collective power. It takes thousands of individuals linking arms in order to create these big changes. And it happens together. We can't do it alone. And so at Remake, we have our Remake Ambassador program, and folks can sign up to become a Remake Ambassador on our website. Once you sign up to the program, Remake will connect you to our global network of fashion activists and empower you to get involved in fashion activism and community building and policy change and worker-led advocacy campaigns. And you'll also have this wonderful opportunity to build connections with other people, with your fellow ambassadors around the world, because we believe that a major part of these solutions is building local community networks and the emphasis that we're stronger together.
Yeah, so true. I mean, connecting to people, it's so important. Also, I've been feeling that for a while now, yeah, as I started working and studying fashion sustainability. And I also felt the need to kind of connect to more people that are doing this type of work. You start feeling like you need to learn more, but learn in community. And it motivates you and you kind of feed off each other. And yeah, it's really great.
You do. You know, people can feel like they're alone in these fights. And I just have to tell you, you are not alone. You know, there are hundreds of thousands of people who feel the way that you feel and who are motivated to make a difference. And it's when we link together that we can really do that.
We touched on this before because you help lead ambassador engagement and community management at Remake. And I believe one of the projects you were mentioning before was the SB62, mm-hmm, right? The bill that passed in California. I wanted to maybe ask you if you want to add something else in terms of what's it about. Why was it so important to pass it in California?
Yeah, definitely. So SB62 is the bill that was ultimately named the Garment Worker Protection Act. And the reason it was so important to pass in the state of California is that here in the United States, historically, Los Angeles is the largest apparel production hub. But up until 2022, when the bill was passed, sweatshop conditions were absolutely pervasive in the state of California, with wages far below the minimum wage. You know, we have a state minimum wage law here in the U.S., but wages were being paid far below those minimum wages. And this was in factories sewing for both small and large brands, brands like Fashion Nova, Forever 21, Urban Outfitters, Charlotte Russe. Workers were experiencing really exploitative conditions right here in the U.S. in Los Angeles. And this was because of, as I mentioned, something called piece rate pay. So workers would be paid by the piece that they sew, so say by the t-shirt that they sew, rather than by the hourly minimum wage. And where the hourly minimum wage in the state of California was $15 per hour, workers were in effect being paid somewhere between $2 and $5 per hour. So significantly below what the state minimum wage was mandated. And so this was the first thing that workers identified with the Garment Worker Protection Act, was that the system of piece rate pay needed to go, because workers should be paid the minimum wage, as is the law in the state of California. And there should not be this loophole where brands can pay by piece rate. So that's the first thing that the Garment Worker Protection Act set out to do. And then the second thing is, as I said, you know, tighten up the system of liability. So who has the most responsibility and the most money and profit to be made in these systems. It's the fashion brands that are producing. And so they should hold liability for wage theft that exists within their factories where their clothing are being sewn. And so it tightens up that liability so that brands are not able to say, those workers aren't our workers, they're subcontractors. They must take responsibility for the fact that the brand set the contract rates, they set the price they're going to pay, they drive the timeline, they create this system where wage theft was occurring. And so they must hold responsibility for that. And so very pleased to say that Governor Newsom signed this bill into law in September of 2021. It went into effect on January 1st, 2022. And the bill was precedent setting in many ways because elements like piece rate pay and joint liability, they have implications for industries beyond just the fashion industry. You know, you can think about how a bill like that might be applied to agricultural work or to gig work, for example. And it also inspired a federal policy. As I mentioned, the Garment Worker Protection Act has inspired the Federal Fabric Act, which we are working to pass into law here in the U.S. that would protect nearly 100,000 garment workers across the country and really revitalize the garment industry here in the U.S., reforming working conditions, eliminating the piece rate pay system, and building up a domestic apparel production focus that the U.S. hasn't had for many years.
That is incredible. And it's amazing that it also got to federal level.
You know, we know the path to passing a federal law will be a long fight, and hopefully people will follow along and support the Federal Fabric Act as we continue to work on it and push for it to become law. But we are very proud of the fact that the Garment Protection Act has proved to be such an exciting and successful model.
Yeah, definitely. Remake currently has this ongoing challenge, the No New Clothes Challenge, ongoing on your website. How does this work?
Yeah, so basically, we run a No New Clothes Challenge every summer. And it's a very simple concept, you know, by challenging yourself to buy no new clothes, whether that means not buying anything at all, or just by prioritizing reuse and secondhand and nothing new, if you will, you can have a positive impact individually, you know, things like reducing your carbon footprint, limiting waste, keeping your money from companies that don't provide their garment workers a living wage, all of these positive things that we've talked about. But also the really important thing about the No New Clothes Challenge is the way that it helps you build a healthy, lasting habit around ethical consumption. And so it's about the mindset shift as much as anything. Research shows that it takes about 3 months to build a healthy habit that lasts, whether that's an exercise habit or, you know, getting up earlier in the morning, whatever you want to build a habit. It takes about 3 months for that to be that sticks and lasts.
I thought it was like 21 days. 3 months?
Maybe if you're really committed, but that's why we encourage 3 months of no new clothes, because we think that if you can commit to that as a starting place, it will start to rebuild, you know, your framework for like not wanting to impulse buy as much, stopping and thinking before you purchase something. Do I really need that? Are there better options out there? You know, just having that initial impulse kind of quieted down. And we think that it's a good way to have that reset and create that first action that then, you know, makes the ripple effect that inspires you to really stick with that sustainable fashion journey. So that's what No New Clothes is all about. You can take part anytime, but we run the challenge every summer, and over 1,700 people are participating in the summer, which is really exciting. And I just think it's a really great first step for you on your sustainable fashion journey.
Yeah, I was going to ask if this was a recurring challenge, but I'm glad it is, because I was looking at your website and I saw it, and then I was like scrolling and I was like, it started in June.
You can do it anytime, you know, and we have so many folks who, you know, each year they commit, you know, I'm joining you together, but I've really been at this now for a year, 2 years, 3 years, because once they do it, it sticks. And that's the whole point of the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I started also reducing a lot my consumption habits, especially when it comes to clothes. And I find it harder for me to actually make a purchase. Like, actually, I had to buy a swimsuit recently because, like, too much information, but I have, like, a scar and it cannot be exposed to the sun. And so I had to really cover it. And my dog, like, ruined my only swimsuit.
No.
Yeah, completely wrecked it. And it took me such a long time because I was actually looking through secondhand apps and trying to also look into more sustainable fashion brands. But, like, it took me such a long while because I was like, I need to buy something that I know I'm going to love and cherish. But, God, it was messing with my mind because it took me such a long while because I was like, I don't want to do this. Am I sure? I want to take like 5 days to think on it. But yeah, it's funny for me to look at my purchasing habits in terms of clothes before I started really engaging with sustainability. And now it's like a big mental shift, as you were saying. It's incredible to see because you start just wondering and like, and why did I feel the need to constantly go to the mall and just look at stuff? And it's amazing how you stop thinking like that. Like the priorities shift and you look at it from a different perspective. It's not as easy as it was for me, at least, to buy something.
Exactly. And the thing is that like your swimsuit story is a perfect example because like you can't fail a no new clothes challenge. Like it's not really about like, oh, I bought nothing. I was perfect at my no new clothes challenge or whatever. It's about like developing those tools of like, okay, do I need this? Is it something that I'm going to wear and have for a long time? Is this the right one for me? Have I done my research? Slowing down and having those reflective moments. It's about like rebuilding the way that you think about it more so than it is about like perfectly quitting shopping or anything like that. And so I love that you told that story because I feel like that's a perfect example of like what the No New Clothes Challenge is trying to achieve. And really, it's because so much money has been spent on sucking us into this like constant consumption loop, right? And it does really take like having that breakup with that consumption pattern. But it's hard. It's hard. And that's why we run the challenge, is so that we can do it together. We could talk about what's stressful about it. We can like problem solve. And hopefully, again, it will give you tools that last.
If you could give a sustainable tip for people listening who want to make better and more sustainable fashion choices, what would that be?
I would say just pausing shopping for, like I said, like 3 months for the No New Clothes Challenge. And if that sounds really challenging, just give it a shot and see how long you can make it. And you really push yourself to pause and think about, do I really need this? And see where it's you.
Great. And now to kind of end our conversation, I really like asking guests some slightly more personal questions that not only kind of allow us to know you a bit better, but that may also inspire people. So what is a book or a movie or documentary that you love and would recommend?
Ooh, okay. So I am really excited to plug Mildew Magazine, which is an independent zine about vintage and secondhand fashion. You can order it online. It's produced in Mexico. I think it's available pretty widely. And it's all about vintage and secondhand fashion, which I love. I'm a contributing writer for Mildew. And I'm just like somebody who loves vintage fashion because I think it's so artistic and creative, but also sustainable. And I think it's a really like dreamy and inspirational publication. So if you are a secondhand fashion lover, check out Mildew.
Nice. Thanks for that. And now, who is someone that inspires you?
Yes, someone who inspires me is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, because she is just a fearless champion for social justice and worker rights. And I really admire the way that even as she has, you know, joined the formal political system, she stayed focused on grassroots activism and community organizing as a model. And I personally think we need more politicians on the picket lines, you know, linking arms with workers and trying to build a better future for all of us. And so I really look up to her for the way that she's continued to prioritize community organizing.
So happy you mentioned her. I love her so much. The work she does. Can you leave us with a curiosity about you that people might not know?
Oh, okay. So I don't know how much of a curiosity this is, but a fun thing about me is that I have a really green thumb. I'm really good at identifying houseplants. I worked in a houseplant shop for several years, and I love to garden and I love plants. And I think that it's really cool to cultivate that close connection with the outdoors. And to me, it is a wonderful way to remind me what we're fighting for when it comes to climate activism and sustainability.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. And if you want to learn more about our guests and some of the topics discussed, check out the info we left in the description. If you like the episode, do subscribe. You'll find out when new episodes are released, and it will also help other people get to the podcast, which wouldn't it just be amazing to spread the word on sustainability and reach more people? Yeah, we'd love that. So there's really nothing left for me to say, and thank you again for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode.